I am Abigail Perry, and this is the oral history of Lawrence Merritt. It's March 15th, 2019, and we are at the Actors Fund in NYC.
So, Lawrence.
Yes.
How did you find your way into the arts?
Well, I was born in upstate New York, out in the country. My father built a house. My mom, my dad, and eventually my twin sisters, we all lived in this little house, which was at one end of an apple orchard, which was part of Four Corners, a stop sign. And the only other boy to play with or hang out with was my cousin, who was 2 years younger, who lived with his family at the other end of the apple orchard. So it was Four Corners, and that was it. And the little yellow school bus came to pick us up. So being by myself and not being able to go play with other people, I went very early on into my own imaginary world. And so I began at a very early age to draw. So I drew Bambi, and I drew horses for my daddy, and I drew whatever, birds and things. And then I drew pictures, headshots from the movie magazines. So I just kept drawing, and as I went on through school, I was very shy, not athletic, which is strange because at the end of my career I did something which requires amazing coordination. And anyway, so on through high school, you know, we moved away for 2 years, lived on a farm, I shoveled cow manure, whatever, drove tractors, which was great, I loved it. Then we moved back to Burnt Hills, which is where I went to school pretty much for 12 years. I'm still in touch with some of my schoolmates. It's a small village. So by the time I got to high school, in my freshman, sophomore year, I joined the drama club. There was no credit for it. You met after school. I joined the art club, same thing. And the woman who did the drama club was our English teacher, and she was a fabulous woman, and I got to thank her for my career much later in life. An amazing woman. And in my junior year, you know, I was the one who drew all the posters for the candy sales in the cafeteria and the dances coming up, and I was always on the decoration committee and whatever. And so, you know, and my drawing went from cartoonish looking women to very tall and slim, like in fashion magazines. And I thought, well, maybe I'll be a fashion designer. That sounds good. I like that. And I kept drawing. I haven't drawn in years, but anyway. In my junior year, the English teacher who was head of the drama club said, you know, the guy who was playing the father in this high school play had to drop out, so we'll try you temporarily for a week and a half, and you have to understand, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. I went, yeah, okay. So I played the father. Onwards and upwards, decorating for the junior prom, posters for whatever. In my junior year, there was an assistant coach, a young chap. And he said, you know, there's a light opera company in Schenectady, the largest big city near me. Why don't you think about going down? They always need singers, because I was in the glee club at school. So it was like, okay, fine. So I went and I auditioned, and I said, I'm a tenor, and they needed tenors desperately. And they went, get over there, you're on. So I did a light opera show at one big theater in Schenectady with this group. And onwards and upwards, senior year, I was the head of the decorating committee, making crepe paper orchids to change the gym into Blue Hawaii. And I designed all the artwork for my high school yearbook, which is right over there on the shelf, and the cover and so forth. And I was the young male lead in the high school play, senior play. And this same gym teacher said, well, you know, there's this place in Maine that I went to, and they do shows. why don't you write to them and see if you can audition, you know? Because you did, you're doing another light opera show now, and you're doing the play. And I, by then I had taken about 6 months of tap classes. That's it. But I was faster than the teacher, so I got bored and I quit. And so I wrote these people. And if I'm skipping around, I'm sorry, but this is the way the story goes. And they wrote back in Kennebunkport, Maine, which is the quintessential seacoast, New England fishing village. Too cute. And so I wrote to them, said, can I come audition? They went, no, sorry. Onwards and upward. Play, yearbook, whatever. And so finally, a little while later, they wrote back and said, yes, if you're interested, come to Kennebunkport on so-and-so date, and we'll see you. So my parents took me to Schenectady. I got a Greyhound bus. I went to Boston, Boston to Kennebunkport. The two men who ran the theater picked me up. I was going to stay in their lodgings that night. And they took me to the lobby of the theater, which was right next door to where they lived. This huge Victorian house they lived in. And the theater. I still have a postcard. I brought it the other day. And they there was a piano. And one of them did the leads and directed, and the other one played one of the two pianos, which was the accompaniment for all their shows. And they said, why do you want to be here? And I said, well, I'm going to be a fashion designer, and I was singing in the Glee Club, and I'm going to go to New York and be a fashion designer, and I did a light opera, and da-da-da. And they were, okay, sing this, la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Good, good. So the next morning on the way to the bus where they were taking me back, they said, you have a full scholarship, report to here on, I don't remember the date. If you didn't have a scholarship, you had to pay $600. You'll get your room, your board, and you'll get $100 for the summer. And you, and so report on so-and-so date. They didn't tell me what I was going to do. So I had moving up day, which is the day that your senior class became seniors, which is a week before graduation, and then I left for summer stock. So I never attended my graduation ceremony, but they sent me my diploma. And the first week, everyone at the theater, the boys were upstairs in the attic, and the girls were on the other side, and the leads, the older people who were from New York, etc., they put them up in B&Bs in town and so forth. But everybody went down into the Ladies' Guild Hall by this famous, famous, much photographed church and took a ballet class. A ballet class? You know, I'd never taken a ballet class. And so we did an hour ballet class in this hall where the ladies did church dinners. There's a kitchen over there and stuff, you know. And we did the, we did a ballet class. At the end of it, the choreographer said, there were certain people that had been hired as dancers. The choreographer said, okay, everybody go back to the theater, you know, work on sets, sew costumes, do whatever. And Lawrence, you stay here. Dancers, we're going to rehearse here because it has a wooden floor. Okay, I guess I'm going to dance. So the first show, we did 10 shows in 10 weeks. And the first show was Gounod's Faust, which is very famous, about Mephistopheles and Margarita and the pits of hell and all that stuff. An opera. So I'm dancing, you know, and with bare feet, and was, you know, I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be a peasant for the rest of my life. And evidently I had an aptitude for it. So I danced in all the shows that required dancing. And at the end of the summer, a chap that was involved in the shows, who is still around, who he and his partner taught East Indian and Spanish dance in New York City, he said, you know, I have an apartment in New York City. I have a roommate, but I got a space. If you're interested in this dancing thing, come on down. So I went home and I told my parents that I had decided that I was going to go to New York and find my fame and fortune. I wasn't going to be a fashion designer and work upstate for a year and then go to fashion design school at Parsons, which everyone knows here. And they went, okay, we'll support you in any way we can. My parents were not wealthy. If that will make you happy. But you have to have $100. So I picked apples at a local apple orchard for a month, and I saved $100. And on my 18th birthday, I got a ride to New York City with a local dance teacher who had choreographed one of these Schenectady light opera musicals. And that's it. And I sort of, a couple of the blogs I explained about the dance team, I kind of frittered around and sort of at the age of 18, started learning how to be an adult, whatever that means, you know. And then I was working as a bartender, making great money. And I thought, you know, I kicked myself in the butt and thought, you know, Lawrence, you came here to be a dancer. You need to get your act together. So I started studying on a regular basis. I went every day to classes. And I started going to auditions. Well, my basic teacher who really taught me to dance and control my big, tall, dangly, long-armed, gorilla-armed body was Matt Maddox, who you all have seen in every single movie that Jack Cole did, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, an amazing man. I wanted to be him. He was an extraordinary dancer. He did leads on Broadway, etc., etc. So, and then the second or third audition I went to was for St. Louis Muni, the Municipal Opera Company in St. Louis, Missouri. It had been part of a big World's Fair, and it seated 11,577 people. It was the largest outdoor theater in America. They went, "We like you, here's a contract, go join Actors Equity." That was 1959. So I got my equity card, which I still have. Then, and again, it was another one of those 10 shows in 10 weeks. It's like, well, you know, when do you work in your character? It's like, you know, when you're going to the bathroom or whatever. And it was 103 degrees in the shade. We danced out in an outdoor pavilion that was open-sided but with a roof. And it was amazing. We did 10 shows in 10 weeks with stars. You know, as the leads. We did King and I, we did Gentlemen for Blondes. I have pictures of some of those shows. It was just an amazing, you know. And went back to New York. One of the choreographers said, you know, I'm gonna be going doing Andy Get Your Gun at Paper Mill Playhouse. Well, I think you uploaded the picture of me with the bare chest and my loincloth as the chief iron horse or whatever the heck his name was. And he said, I want you to be the lead dancer. So I was in the chorus, and then I did the lead Indian dance, you know, and with this choreographer from St. Louis at Paper Mill Playhouse, which is known in the theater. And then I just kind of kept going, you know, and people started knowing who I was, and then I showed up, and I was easy to work with, and it wasn't a pain in the butt. And then I went and I auditioned for No Strings in 1962, which was the first show that Richard Rodgers did the music and the lyrics for, because Oscar Hammerstein of Rodgers and Hammerstein fame had passed away. And so the choreographer director was Joe Layton, who had just recently done Once Upon a Mattress, starring Carol Burnett. So, I literally, anybody doesn't know it, it's a chorus line. You're on a line at the end. You know, you dance and you dance and thank you very much, we don't need you. And then you make it to the last 10, and you know they need only 6. They call your name, please step forward. When we call your name, you step forward. And then they say, and the rest of you, thank you very much for your work, goodbye. And you know you've gotten a Broadway show, which is an extraordinary feeling. So that was 1962. That was No Strings. I'm not sure chronologically where I am at that point, but I did that for 6 months. Then I think I did a review of Matt Maddox. I was the only one boy from New York, from his classes, and I had worked in his classes from the back row to the front. There were three boys from California, and New York dancers were usually better than that. Anyway, and so we rehearsed in Paris. Never been there, because it was cheaper to do the costumes there and have them made there. And the fabric was better, and the feathers and the jewels, plus all the showgirls were there of many races. And then there was a line of girls called the Charlie Ballet, and they were mostly English or Irish or whatever. And I made a friendship with someone who I still am in touch with, who was an amazing woman. And so, you know, I did that show, and someone who just passed away, who was an extraordinary music composer, Michel Legrand, he did the music for it. I think you uploaded that postcard from La Parisienne at the Dunes Hotel. And we were supposed to stay there for I don't know how long. I hated Las Vegas. I hated it. So I ended up quitting and coming back to New York. And then I did a show with Ron Field, which is my first one. And by then I had assisted him, I think, on Summer Stock in Toronto. So the show was nowhere to go but up. It was an extraordinary company, 16 girls, girl dancers, singers, the best of Broadway, and 8 boys. One of them was me, and I was usually in front and center. And some of them were still around, some of them are gone. It was choreographed by Ron Field, assisted by Michael Bennett. It was directed by Sidney Lumet, who directed Serpico and all these gritty crime dramas, who never should have directed a Broadway musical because he didn't have the knowledge. And the lyrics and the book were written by James Lipton, who is the host of Inside the Actor's Studio on a TV show. So it should have been a hit, but it wasn't. We went out of town and played, came back to New York City, went to the Winter Garden, and played 9 days, I think. So I told the choreographer that I want to, if you want me to stop, just tell me. I called the choreographer, I said, I want to get the hell out of here, I need to get out of New York, I need to go someplace, because you did a fabulous job, and we got panned, and we got clothes, and whatever. Couple of months later, in 1963, he called and said, I'm going to Paris to choreograph the Casino de Paris show, and I need an assistant. It will pay $300 in French francs per week. Fine. Yeah, I'm on. So I went off to Paris, and he and I assisted him. I met my first partner there, who was an American expatriate who had worked in shows there. And I still have a picture of the four of us, Ray Aguillon, who was Bob Mackie's partner, costume designer. Went to dinner. So I met Frank, and he's still around in my life. And so we became partners. And it was spring. I'm of French descent. It's Paris. I'm in love. I think I'll stay. So I stayed in Paris for 3 years. I worked at the Casino de Paris for a year as a featured dancer, doing the can-can and yada, yada, yada. And then you could also work during the day and do TV shows. So, to make extra money and then do your show at night. And we did a show every night, 13 tableaus. That means 13 night kind of numbers, you know. And so I have all kinds of stories from that. Anyway, one of the shows I did was with Josephine Baker, which was extraordinary, Petula Clark. And then Frank and I did a rather abortive nightclub act with this crazy expatriate American girl who had come over with a dance trio and taught classes, and she was always late, so I ended up teaching class tomorrow or beginning of July, whatever. And we played several toilets in Spain and a TV show in London called Sunday Night at the Palladium and whatever. And then I was asked to become one of the stars, the only time I've ever called myself a star, of the Moulin Rouge. So there was me, the American star, Ralph, the German guy, Isa, who was Isabel, she always sang and moved, and Jillian, who had been a Bluebell girl. They were very tall, very statuesque, and she was English. And the other guy and myself and Jillian, the English girl, we all worked dressed and nude. Now, nude means a G-string with rhinestones and a couple of armbands or a headdress and a feather. And, you know, and you could be topless, yes, but you were wearing $6,000 worth of furs and feathers and rhinestones, you know. And it was classy. Nobody ran so that your boobs bobbed up and down. You know, you were, it was classy, you know. And they did, first that year, they did a pool number. So we had, Jillian and I were chosen to be the couple in the pool. And you have pictures of that. So we went to a local pool, and there was a woman who taught synchronized swimming like in the Olympics. She taught us how to do all this stuff underwater. And here comes this pool pushed forward onto the stage, and it came up to the stage level. When it reached a certain level, I went, "Come, my darling, into my underwater world." And we went down the back steps and started swimming in this pool. Well, if you stood on your tiptoes, the water came about to your chin, you know. And you can actually hear music underwater. So we did all this Esther Williams underwater pool number, and then crawled out, and she sat on one corner and I sat on the other, and we all went da-da. It was like, oh my God, look, Margaret, they're swimming in a pool, you know, people from Omaha or whatever. And so I can go on a lot, by the way, and then I ended up, they asked me if I wanted to go to Vegas. I thought, well, maybe I should go to Vegas and make more money. And they promised me a lead pas de deux, you know, in the show that was going to be done there. And I went, yeah, sure, fine. So we ended up rehearsing in Milan for a month. I have pictures of that too. And again, because they made the costumes in Milan, you know, it was cheaper for the feathers, the fabrics, the whatever. And the cast was all there because they were, you know, the English girls again and the leading nude who sang and danced and whatever, and you know, Jacqueline Duguay. And so we rehearsed for a month, went off on a special plane to Las Vegas, and rehearsed. The lead pas de deux never panned out, and I had a contract for a year, and so I stayed for a year. And at the end of it, I said, excuse me, goodbye, it didn't pan out, I'm leaving now. And someone there has said, you know, Harold Minsky, the last of the famous Minsky brothers, as in Minsky's Burlesque, is doing a review. Would you like to be the lead dancer? So there was to be one male dancer, one production singer, six girl dancers, I think, and eight showgirls, several of whom are, you know, one of the girl dancers I'll see this evening at this AA function. Anyway, so we rehearsed in Las Vegas. We came east. We worked at the Mineola Theater. We worked at the DuPont Theater in Wilmington, Delaware. I was to do with this woman who worked nude. She had, you know, G-string and feathers and whatever, and we did this very sexy, sensual pas de deux, and I wore boots and a G-string. After the first night in Wilmington, Delaware, they made me wear pants. So we did that, and then we ended up going to Chicago to the very famous Edgewater Beach Hotel, and we played there, I can't remember, a month, 2 months. met a lot of nice people in Chicago, came back to New York, and Ron Field, my friend again, was doing Golden Rainbow with Stephen Eady. And he asked me if I wanted to be the featured dancer again, or one of the, you know. So, yeah, sure. So Kelly Bishop, who I believe won a Tony for A Chorus Line as Sheila, she and I did this strange pas de deux in this huge number that was sort of Babylon a la Las Vegas, you know, with feathers and excellent stuff. And the opening number was about Vegas and showgirls and signs like the hotels in Vegas that came in and showgirls on things being flown in and all that. And I was featured, so was Kelly. And we did that at the 1968, we did that number from the Schubert Theater, and that was the opening number of the 1968 Tony Awards. We did that.